Okay, so welcome to our third week of Stories from Swami. We are here with the Gammows. Karen's going to start us off, yippee, and regale us with all kinds of fun stuff. So take it away.
Thank you for having me and having us. This is really fun. So great to see you guys. Actually, why don't we do this? Why don't you come on over this way, and that way I can see you, like over here, and then I won't have to sweep wide. Yeah. No, come on over. Come on over. Hey, Daya. Great to see you. Oh, Daya, we should have you tell some stories, too. Have fun. Oh, that's great. Thank you. Oh, bless your heart. Okay. Are, is everyone comfy and ready to go? Yes, I hope so. And if not, they'll get sent in the right direction. Okay, let's start with a prayer. Are you guys ready? Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Great Gurus, Beloved Swamiji, be with us tonight. Help us feel your loving presence. We know that you are with us. Help us hear your gentle, loving whispers. Om, peace. Amen. All right. Hi. Good to see you guys. This is fun. So I'm going to start with a couple of stories that some friends have shared with me from Ananda Assisi. I heard these very soon after Swami passed away, and they're so unusual. And then I'll roll into a bunch of my own stories. A friend of mine in Assisi had a terrible case of asthma, terrible. His doctor said no dairy, no wheat, no nothing, basically. No dairy and no wheat in Italy is a death sentence, in case you didn't know. So he was on this strict diet, and Swami asked him to dinner in town, and he had made a note to tell him all the stuff he couldn't eat, but he didn't get time. So they're all in town together, and Swami says, oh, come, sit right next to me. And the fellow sits right next to Swami, and before he has a minute to tell him, Swami has ordered food for the whole table. Everybody has pasta primavera loaded with cheese on top. And Swami says, please bring me more cheese. And the cheese comes out in a big dish, and Swami holds the cheese, and he looks at my friends, smiles, takes his spoon, and just ladles extra cheese on. And this poor guy is just, oh no, I'm going to die. I'm going to be dead by the time I get home tonight. And Swami just looked at him and he thought, I guess I have to eat it. I'm just going to eat it and hope for the best. So he ate the whole meal. And he, from that moment on, he never had one symptom of asthma again. Isn't that fun? I love that story. It makes me hungry, that story. Okay, here's another fun one. A friend of mine from Assisi had just flown to the United States from Italy, and he got in really late, and he had jet lag. So he was dead asleep someplace, probably at his place. And Swami called and woke him and said, come to dinner, come to my house. And he's half awake. He was in his pajamas, and he threw on a bathrobe or a coat on top of his pajamas. He didn't even change his clothes. This is now he's in the U.S. And I'll tell you, this is Narya. He's a really good dresser. He always looks like $1 million. So he's in his PJs. He's got a kind of overcoat on, and he sort of staggers to the door. And Swami opens the door and is wearing his most beautiful white suit. He's dressed. Swami is dressed to the nines, even for Swami. And he welcomes him in, and there's a huge table filled with people all dressed beautifully sitting down to dinner. Narya said, I have never been more embarrassed in my entire life. So he shuffles in, you know, and Swami says, oh, come. and sits next, and Narayan is like just mortified. The entire meal, Swami reached under the table and held his hand. Is that sweet? A loving, sweet gesture. Swami was so, this our little unspoken whatever it was we needed, he would give it to us. And sometimes he would give us things we didn't know we needed, and we'll talk about those later. There was a gardener who took care of Swami's yard at his house in Assisi. If you've ever been there, it's just surrounded with beautiful flowers. And it was an Italian man. And he usually came at a certain day and a certain time of the week. I think it was like a Wednesday. But the day that Swami passed away, which was, I think it was a Sunday there, Saturday. It was Sunday morning. That's right, over there. He came that morning unexpectedly at 6 a.m. He just felt inspired that morning, got up early, brought some gardenias and planted fresh gardenias right outside Swami's bedroom window. And then at about 8 a.m., there was kind of a commotion in the house, and he didn't want to bother anybody, so he left. But that was right when Swami passed away, in that bedroom with those gardenias right outside the window. So sweet. So these Swamis, there's so many neat miracle stories about Swami, but in the early years of that I knew him, which was, we moved there in 1983, which doesn't sound that early, but wow, there wasn't much at Ananda Village in 1983. In those early years, he was more hidden, and we just didn't, most of us didn't know, unless somebody would tell you, that there was something kind of special happening with that person. We were friends with Asha really early on. She was a great teacher back then too, and we just right away knew that she was somebody we wanted to learn from, and she made it clear right away who Swami was. So if you had ears to hear, you would hear. My first experience with Swami, though, was before I knew anything much about him. I had read his book, The Path, in Philadelphia. I'd been thrilled by it, actually. So I couldn't wait to hear him speak at Ananda Village. We were in Philly. We had a long trip. That's a different story. We're not talking about our life story. But we're at Ananda, and we were at a satsang outdoors in the beautiful, right below his house. It used to be a temple of trees below the Crystal Hermitage. And we're sitting, waiting. We had just gotten in off the boat, basically. Can't wait. Where is he? And remember that at that time, the edition of The Path that was available was of Swami in a beard and an orange robe. Where is he? So, and this man comes out on the stage, and he starts adjusting the microphone. And he's there kind of a long time. And then testing and speaking a little bit into the mic, and then he starts to talk a little bit, and I'm thinking, who is this guy? Where's Swami? Well, it turned out it was Swami. He was shaved, and I just didn't even recognize him. He just looked different to me than what was on the cover, and I thought, I guess that's Swami Kriyananda. Well, he's not wearing his robes, so I guess, all right. So what we're watching, and then all of a sudden, soon into his talk, He's looking on the ground, and he's brushing some stuff off his pants. He keeps talking, and then he starts going like this. He's squishing ants. Oh, my God. I was an environmentalist before I got to Ananda, and I just went, I just was just stunned. What was happening? I think it was my Zen koan moment. He just took my brain and he just went poosh, like that. And he, never once in all the years that I knew him did he ever do anything like that again. So I'm assuming that was for my benefit. It was too weird, absolutely weird. Anyway, so that was my first meeting of Swami. It was a test. It was sort of with relish that he was crushing those ants. Anyway, I'm so glad he never did it again. I would have had to ask him about it. Do you remember that story of Master, I think, killed some ants too at some point, and Swami said, "Sir," he expressed a little bit of horror around it, and Master said, "It was their time to go." Remember that story? I thought, okay, Swami probably would have said the same thing to me. So not too long after we got there, it was probably, oh, I don't know, 6 months, 8 months, David had the opportunity to meet with Swami about probably some financial stuff. Swami heard he'd done what, been a stockbroker before, so he invited him over to chat about a few things. And I thought, oh, that's nice. He gets to meet Swami and talk to him. Asha saw me over at Master's Market wandering around doing something or another, and she said, why aren't you at Swami's? And I said, well, it's David who's having the meeting. And she said, you must be there. If there's any opportunity to be with Swami, you should be there. Come with me. And she threw me in her car, and she drove over the hill, and she got me into the meeting, and I just sat in the corner while they chatted. From that, I understood, I guess I should really be paying more, a lot more attention to this Swami fellow. Okay, I had a lot of respect for Swami, but nothing like what I understood from Asha. Asha made it clear. So it wasn't very long after that that I began praying for an opportunity to work with Swami, because if this is the special guy here, I really want to know everything I can. And I prayed very hard for, I'd say, about a month, and no response from the ether. And so I thought, all right, if I can't work with Swami, then let me work with Asha. And less than 24 hours later, Asha called me up and said, I was meditating this morning and your face popped into my head. I could really use help with my tours. Would you like to help me get me on the road booking my talks? And I said, yes. And I thought, well, okay, that is the power of prayer. And that you can't always get what you ask for if you ask for something too big, but then I asked for the right size thing, and that came. So that was a nice story, too. But within a short time, I did end up working with Swami on his staff for quite a long time. In the publishing element of his work was considered his staff, because he was putting books out at an alarming rate. And we were all rushing to keep up with. Sometimes it was more than a book a year. And in those days, it was a physical book. We printed it ourselves on our own printing press, had to get it out, publish it, sell it. We actually went out in motorhomes and sold it in bookstores directly. So there was a lot of activity around books. And so a number of stories have to do with just working with him on projects. One of my favorite stories was... I'm going to put this in the do it now category, which is a big theme of Swami's. Anybody who's ever worked anywhere near him knows how exhausting it can be to do a project with him. So he calls me on the phone and he says, I have just finished 8 new videos and I would like to have back cover copy written for all of them within the next 30 minutes. Can you do it? No, I'm not kidding. And I said, I'm a big wiggler. I said, where are you? He said, I'm in Palo Alto and I want you to fax them to me as soon as they're done. And I said, can I get 2 done in 30 minutes and have you review them and then get the rest done in the next hour? And he's paused for just a minute. He thought, am I going to let her wiggle out of this? And he said, that's a good idea. I think he was curious to see if I could do it or not. So I cannot tell you how fast. I hadn't even seen most of these videos. I knew of their titles. So I thought, just tried to intuit the best I could what the content of those were. I wrote the best back cover copy ever. But there was one, I got 2 done in 30 minutes, no problem, faxed them down. And then I got 1 left and I have no idea what to write on the back cover. And I think it was about the yugas. I was still a little new at Ananda. The yugas were a little, come on, who's going to buy a video about the yugas? What could I possibly say that would interest anybody? That moment, Jaya walks into crystal clarity. He's never walked into crystal clarity before or since. I don't know what he was doing over there. He was my man. And I grabbed him by the collar, and in 5 minutes, he told me everything I needed to know. And I faxed my last one out. And Swami sent back a little fax that said, good girl. So that was a pleasure. But apparently I needed more lessons in the do it now category. So I'll tell you a couple more. This is my favorite. Swami bought a new computer down here in Palo Alto. And he loved the latest tech equipment. So Lakshman was not with him at the time, and which was actually for Swami a great liberation, because he, as soon as he knew Lakshman was not with him, he beelined it for fries. And he, as fast as he could, he picked out the computer he wanted. And just as he was paying for it, I think Lakshman arrived and was, "No, Swami, not that one, another one." Because Lakshman has to set this stuff up, you know. No, is that right? Lakshman was not there for this one, because this is an important part of the story. So that was a different story. He bought the one he wanted, beautiful laptop, and he got it home. And it's a PC. He's been working on PCs for a long time, and we're all Mac people down here. And he looks around and he says to Asha, I need this set up right away. Who can do this for me?" And Asha said, "Karen can do it." And he turned around and looked at me and said, "Karen, will you set up my computer for me?" And I said, "Sir, I don't know anything about PCs." And he said, "Thank you so much." And so I grabbed the PC and I took it upstairs, and I immediately called Lakshman in Italy and said, "Help! Help, help, help." And he said, "I'll guide you through." So I'm on the phone and on and off the phone with Lakshman for probably about 8 hours. And it's about 2 a.m. by now. And I'm working in an upstairs room of Asha's old house. And right next door, Swami is sleeping. You know, he's in the room next door. And I'm thinking, 2 o'clock, you know, I'm not going to finish this. And I could use some sleep, so I'm going to slip out really quietly. I'll go home and I'll come back at 6 or 7 a.m. We'll finish up. So open the door, tiptoe, and all of a sudden, Swami's bedroom door opens, and Swami comes to the door. He's at the door like this, with his hair all like this, as if he had leapt out of bed. And he says, "Karen, where are you going? Is it finished?" And I said, "No, sir, it's not finished yet, but soon. I'm just going to go home and rest a little, come back, and I'll finish it in the morning." And he said, "Oh, couldn't you finish it now?" And I looked at my watch and I thought, "Yes, I guess I could." He said, "Thank you so much. Good night." "Okay, do it now." Isn't that something? Oh my gosh, I was amazed. I have a lot of energy, but he wanted more energy than I had. I got it done. You can always do more. You know, I mean, he's amazing. Probably. I wish he knew how to set up a PC, because I still had to call Lakshman again. He was probably up all night helping me too. Really. Lakshman's always available. You know, he was Swami's secretary for a long time, and he too learned to always say, "Yes, sir." I bet it was almost never a time when he wasn't reachable. I think he's still recovering. Okay, so here's another fun one about energy. Swami had just written Do It Now, this wonderful little booklet, if you've seen it. And I think it was during the lawsuit years, and he was feeling like he wanted to put positive energy out into the world just to meet that negative energy. And he decided to pay for it himself and give it away to people. So he bought a pile of them, and he had a big party at Crystal Hermitage, and he invited everyone over to receive the gift of this book. And so he had boxes all around him down by the pool there, if you've seen the back of the Hermitage. And he's reaching in with some difficulty and just grabbing books and giving them to people. And I thought, oh, I can help with that. So I slipped around behind, and I got into the box and sort of fed it up into his hand. And he made no acknowledgement that there was anyone there. He just continued to do what he was doing. But the books were just coming in a little bit faster. I don't even know what he was thinking. But every time, so I'm really an efficiency expert. I was thinking, what is the fastest way to get this book into his hand so that he has to just do nothing, just easy peasy. It's going to be the same every time, boom, 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 fast as can be, except that every time Swami put his hand back to get the book, he did it differently. Every single time. I mean, I don't know how many hand positions are possible, but I gave away hundreds of books and every single hand motion was different. So what was Swami saying, right? He was saying, you can't go to sleep like that. Ha! I'll show you. You have to be awake when you're around me. So I was exhausted by the end. And at the end of it, he just got up and walked away. Nothing. There was nothing, no exchange of conversation. But I had had such a lesson back there. It was incredible. Isn't that fun? Love that story. Oh, it reminds me, actually, I did a lot of piano in those days for Swami. He was singing various things, and there weren't that many piano players around. I guess I was one of the few. So he often would perform a piece, and I would accompany for him. He would never sing a piece the same way twice. Swami would never sing a piece the same way twice. So Todd and I joke about it. Love is a Magician, he loved to sing that one. And Todd jokes that Swami would sing it in 9/7 time and 1 3/4 times through with an unexpected tag in the middle. So you're accompanying, and you wherever he goes, love is all I know, sun rays on the snow of a winter long. So, you know, that's just another example of, hello, are you awake? Better stay awake if you're going to be around me. Another category of stories that I love to tell is there a crack in that pot? Swami liked to poke and see how you were doing. And he didn't really mind if it hurt. He wanted you to notice if your ego was oversensitive in some way. And so there are many, many stories of ego popping opportunities. One of my favorites is I was in a car ride. David and I were in a rare car ride with Swami on our way into Assisi. He asked us to come shopping with him. But actually, he did not ask us to come shopping with him. He came to poke a hole in our ego, my ego. He's just chit-chatting away completely trivially for a long time. And suddenly, he starts talking about a man who had lived at the village for a long time, who had left. And a lot of us had been happy to see him go. He was a difficult person. Good riddance. Yay. We're happier without him. But Swami didn't feel that way at all. Swami spoke about him with great tenderness and love and said many fine things about him. And then he said, his last statement was, and if he were to come back to Ananda now, I'm sure we would all welcome him with open arms. And then he fell silent. And he waited to see if I would say anything back from the back seat of the car. And I sat in the back seat like this, trying to decide if I would be willing to welcome this person back with open arms. This was somebody who had been a particular torment to me, but many others. And inside my mind, I said, much as I would like to be able to say yes, Swami, I could not do it. And as soon as I said it in my mind, Swami just changed the subject and started talking about something else. So, isn't that something? I don't mind. I'm happy to be honest with Swami. I was not able to do it. But what's fun is he could tell, could read your thoughts. This is a very, very beautiful story. Early on at Ananda, very early on, Swami had been overseas for a while, and so we hadn't seen him in a while. And I was wondering, did I really belong at Ananda? Just didn't know if I fit in. It's very easy to feel it's too much. The mountain is too high for me. I just didn't feel like, and so... I was in that bhav or in that mood, and Swami was just coming back from a long trip to overseas to Europe, and he was visiting what was then the San Francisco House, which was a big, a lot of people lived there. It was a big mansion in San Francisco, and a pile of what I called his entourage was down from the village to greet him, which made me feel even more left out. All these old-time Ananda people welcoming Swami back, and he's talking with everybody, and it's not my people. I felt love for Swami, but I didn't really feel part of everybody else's scene. So I wandered off into a neighboring room of the mansion, and I just sat there sadly looking out the window thinking, it's not for me. And then somebody touched me on the shoulder, and I turned around, and it was Swami. All by himself, he had left the entourage, and he put out his arms, and he gave me a big hug. Incredibly sweet. Yeah, very sweet. So I thought, all right, I'll stay. I was afraid to fly. Desperately afraid to fly. Something happened to me in my early 20s. I had a very bad flight experience someplace, and for a couple of years, I just took trains after that, which would be a big bummer if I still had that problem, because we travel all the time now. So we signed up for a pilgrimage to India. I have no idea why I agreed to this, by the way, given that I hadn't flown in such a long time. And we're standing in the San Francisco house getting ready to depart. And I'm getting more and more nervous. It's like, how many hours was it back then? It was like 26 hours on the flight just getting over there. And there were going to be about 8 flights inside of India once we got there. And Swami was chatting with a few of us. And I said, you know, I'm really, really nervous about flying, sir. I'm kind of afraid to fly. And he looked at me so coldly. And he said, have you no faith? And he turned around and he just walked away. Cold, very cold. And I thought, yeah, I have no faith. That's why I'm afraid to fly. But I got on the flight and I wasn't afraid. And I basically, wouldn't you say, Pi? I've never been afraid since then. It's a little hard on the bumps, but it's not bad. I mean, I was crippled. I could not get on a flight before that. So, fun. Thank you, Swami. Thank you, Swami. I really appreciate it. We need it now, too.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes,
had
please.
Had you tried to get on flights before that point?
I had tried to become desensitized to my fear of flying by going to the airport and watching planes take off. But I haven't. I may have gotten on a flight or two, but probably with tranquilizers and trepidation. I remember one flight I was on where I was just gripping the handrest like this the whole time, and David had to kind of peel me out of my seat afterwards. So I probably had flown a little, but not successfully. Yeah. Yeah. You know how the Catholics canonize saints? They have to have a couple of proven miracles. Swami, in my book, has had so many amazing miracles. He is way, way canonized, by me at least. Here's a very interesting story. This is an attunement story. I love singing. I was trained classically. Both my parents are professional musicians. And there was a little group of singers at Ananda Village that had formed that were all terrific sight readers and classical musicians. And so we were getting together, a little quartet of us, with a great pianist accompanying. And once a week, we just hang out, sing classical, great pieces. Oh, one of them was a former opera singer. One of them was, two of them had sung in opera before. And all of us could just read anything. So we just bring over Mozart and Handel, and it was fantastic. So a month or two after this, I got a call from Swami. And he said, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. I never get to talk to Swami. I mean, I can count on one hand the number of times he's asked to talk to me about something. So I couldn't wait to go down. And he said, I'm going to ask you something, and I'd like you to consider it. I said, sure, what? And he said, I'd like you to not sing with that group anymore that you're singing with. And I said, why? And he shared some of his thinking, and I thought, wow, God, it's going to be hard to give that up. It was like, you know, an ice cream and a chocolate sauce and a whipped cream all together. But I thought, all right, he's asking me, I won't do it. And so I said no, and I found a way to graciously drop out. Within a year, every single person in that group had left Ananda. Wow. I would never have known that. I would have never have guessed that. And they're all wonderful people, all of them. For whatever reason, if I had, there's, when you sing with people, when you do anything with people, you're tuning to them. You know, music is vibration. And so even unknown to me, there was just tuning happening. And it might have affected me, almost like getting a virus or something. So anyway, I like all of those people still. So, but I'm so glad that I'm still at Ananda. So that was interesting advice. So let me just check my time. Okay, I'm good. I'll take a few more minutes and then we'll take a break. One of the things Swami always encouraged in people was for them to stand on their own two feet and be strong in themselves. He didn't like people to lean or be weak. I think that was why he's pushing us all the time in different ways. I was in a meeting with him once, and we're singing through a song, and he's rewritten one of the notes, and he turns to someone and says, okay, so I've changed that note, and it's an F sharp now. And I thought, that's not an F sharp, it's an F natural. It's an F natural, sir. And he said, no, it's an F sharp. Isn't it an F sharp? So-and-so was sitting nearby and talks, yes. And the other person said, yes, it's an F sharp. And I said, gosh, really, I think it's an F. He said, no, it's an F sharp. This goes on for a while. This is just strange little conversation. And I'm thinking, I know it's an F. I'm just going to have to just tell him. So I just, you know, I'm not shy about standing up for myself, but I was a little shy because it was Swami. Finally, I said, gosh, sir, I'm afraid it's an F. And he said, don't be afraid. You're right. It is an F. He said, when you think something is true, you stand up for it. Don't be afraid to stand up for yourself. So that was a little test to see whether I would just, I don't know, okay, it is an F sharp. Maybe it is. So, and then the other fun one was, well, let me just see, which one do I want to tell my last story. Here's a great one. I was doing these stories last year, and I was getting ready for it, and I had a dream the night before that was so beautiful, and I wanted to share it with you. I was in Swami's original dome way back when his whole house was just that dome. The kitchen was in there, his living room was there, everything was there. And this was after Swami passed away, you know, so it's just a dream about Swami at that time. And he was up in the kitchen area up above, and he poured me a cup of tea, and he said, Karen, it's so good to see you. And I said, oh, it's wonderful to see you too. He said, I'm always here, but so few people come to visit. Okay, so that, I'm going to leave you with that. I am always here, but we don't always remember to visit. So let's try and remember more. Sweet. Bless you guys.
Thank you, Karen. Before we break, are there any questions? Well, we're going to break. Think of the questions.
Think about your questions. Let's take 5 minutes. Just take a little break, and then we'll have David come, and he'll take us through.
Okay, we're back from break.
Okay. I just want to share just a couple of thoughts at the beginning. You know, no one alive at Ananda has ever met Master. But we kind of feel like we have. And the reason we feel like we have is because Swami's told so many stories about Master with such a personal energy that we kind of feel like we were there. So I feel that those of us who were blessed enough to be there in the earlier years and really spend that time with Swami have a real obligation. Because there are people coming to Ananda now who have never even seen Swami before. So being able to have evenings like this, I just think is really important. And I feel both blessed to be able to share some things and hope that the people who hear them feel blessed, like I've always been blessed by what Swami shared about Master. So I have a number of stories I want to tell. I've put a little bit of titles on them because just like all the Hindu deities, there's one God, but each deity represents a different aspect of God. Swami has many, many different facets to his personality, and I won't even say personality, to his character. So we'll start with some of those, and I'll mention at least my way of categorizing them a little bit at the beginning. Excuse me. The first one is saints make life uncomfortable because we're here to find God. So Karen and I are at the Crystal Hermitage, and this was some good years ago at this point, 15 years ago or so, maybe a little more. And Swami had put the idea out that he wanted, I'm going to start in a different direction because I don't want to give away the punchline. I'm chatting with a friend of mine. And this friend of mine had just been asked by the organization he was part of. He was a longtime Ananda member, but he worked elsewhere. And they asked him if he would be willing to move to Venice, Italy, because they had things there they needed done. And he was asking me. I was at the Crystal Hermitage, and he saw me there and just said, "Hey, David, you know, can I chat with you for a minute?" I said, "Sure." So we chatted, and he explained this. And I said, "You know, these things don't come up that often. What a life adventure. You're not signing a 10-year contract or something. But how can you turn something like that down? It seems like it would be really fun." My words are still wafting in the air, barely out of my mouth. Karen walks up and says, "Swami just asked us to move to Italy. What do you think?" And I looked at my friend and I said, "Would you please repeat back to me everything that I just said to you?" Saints make life uncomfortable. It turned out to be an incredible adventure for us. And I've learned over the years, always say yes to what Swami asks you to do. In that spirit, Karen and I spent some years representing Ananda at different events around the United States. One was a Whole Life Expo. So we're in New York at the Whole Life Expo, and there's a booth and selling, you know, the books and all of that sort of stuff. Swami's going to be a keynote speaker there. And we're in the booth, and Swami walks by, and there's about six of us in the booth or so, a small group. Swami walks by and said, "David, I would like you to stand in the aisle and hand out flyers about the fact that I'm speaking tomorrow." Now, I've always learned to say yes to Swami, but that doesn't mean I always have learned to think yes to Swami. So in my heart, I'm going, "I don't want to stand in the aisle and hand out flyers. What a goofy thing to do." "Yes, sir, I'd love to hand out flyers." So I march into the aisle at much less than an eighth of a mile an hour with my feet feeling like lead. And I get into the intersection of the aisle. You know, we're in a corner booth or something. And each flyer feels like it weighs 13 pounds. It's a single 8.5 by 11 sheet. And I sort of pick it up with all my effort. And this woman walks by and I say, "Swami Kriyananda speaking here tomorrow." And she grabs the flyer and says, "Swami speaking here? I've always wanted to hear him speak. Thank you so much." And walks off. And I think, I can do this. And so I get another flyer. Now it only weighs about 11 pounds. So I pick it up and I thrust it into this guy's hand. And he says, "Swami speaking here tomorrow? Oh, I've wanted to see him for 15 years. Thank you so much." And now I'm full of it. And I'm thinking, I can do this. This is great. Right? Because we're always looking for the material plane to validate what we're doing. I get the third flyer. And now I can't wait to shove it in somebody's hand. And the guard walks up and says, "You can't hand flyers out in the aisle. Go back to your booth." So I go back to the booth. Swami walks up 5 minutes later and says, "What are you doing here? I asked you to get in the aisle and hand out flyers." And I said, "Oh, the guard said I can't do that." He said, "Oh, okay, never mind." And he walked away. This was totally for me. Learn to say yes, and the blessings happen. And we're so stuck in the material all the time that we don't appreciate the blessings that come from cooperating with what God asks you to do. Now I want to share a few different stories about compassion because, and it'll be hard for me to get through some of these, Swami was incredibly strong with an enormous amount of energy and the most powerful person I've ever met. But he could be so sweet that you feel like he could pick up an amoeba and cradle it when the time was right. Okay. So Karen and I are in Italy, and it was a real blessing. Swami, I think it may have been the same trip, probably was. Swami said, "I'm going to town. I have a bunch of errands to do. Do you guys want to come?" And we said, "No, I'm doing my hair." No. We said, "Yes, of course we would love to come." So we went into town. Swami really liked cappuccinos. So we would do an errand and have a cappuccino. We'd do another errand and have a cappuccino. So we're in a cappuccino bar, and we're just there with Swami, and it was just a lovely energy, and we're chatting. And this beggar walks into the bar, very disheveled, ripped clothing. He had a cardboard, a flat cardboard box. It was sort of cut low, so it had just a little lip, with a piece of string around his neck to the corners of the box. So he's sort of holding it out away from his belly a little bit, kind of like that. And in that box were just a bunch of things. And he sort of shuffles over. He didn't walk very well. And in Italian, Karen and I both speak some Italian, he said, would you like to buy something? And I have to admit, slightly ashamedly, but I think you'll understand, my thought was, go away. I'm here with Swami. I don't want to be interrupted with this kind of stuff. And he, in this little thing, he's got one of those little handheld battery-operated fans and a couple of combs and a pencil set, a whole bunch of little stuff. But Swami turns to him and says, oh, thank you so much. Let's see what we have here. And he starts looking through the things, and he picks out about four items, and he gives the man 12 euros or whatever it was for that, and the man just sort of shuffles off. And Swami says, we should always support people who are trying to better themselves in a way that's with dignity. I will never forget that. Karen and I are on our way to Rome. We used to go to Italy a lot. And Swami was speaking in Rome. So we arranged our trip. We knew he was going to be speaking there to land in the Rome airport. And instead of going up to Assisi, to stay in Rome, join in the talk he was giving, you know, sing in the choir, all that stuff. Okay. Swami's staying in the hotel. We're staying in the same hotel. So we land. Now, on the flight, I was always very careful not to develop too much of a personal relationship with Swami, because that's not what he's for. I don't mean for, that sounds almost mercenary, but you know what I mean. I mean, that's not what's happening. He's my guide. He's here to help me find God. And, you know, whatever person was there was perfectly lovely, but it wasn't the point. But somehow on this flight, I missed him in a personal way. I just was missing him. And the thought just sort of went through my mind, sir, I miss you. I just miss that personal touch. Okay. And it just sort of flitted through my mind. Couldn't have been more than 30 seconds. Probably was like 10 seconds. We land in Rome. We get to the hotel. I have two 60-pound suitcases. You know what it's like to go to Italy. These giant suitcases. Karen opens the door. I drag the suitcases in. I haven't put the suitcases down. The phone rings. It's Leela, his housekeeper, who always traveled with him. Leela's on the phone. She says, Swami wants to see you. And I'm thinking, how does he even know we're here? I mean, it's not like he keeps tabs on us, you know. So, of course, we throw the bags down. We run up to his suite. We walk in. He's got a suite. And there's 15, 20 people or so. It wasn't a giant group, but, you know, the close people. So I walk in, and as always, I stand in the back of the room because, you know, that's what you do. So I'm standing in the back of the room. Swami sees me coming and says, David, good to see you. Come over here. And he clears a space right at his feet and says, sit here. And he spends the next hour talking to me. What do you do with that? You know, so that's both a compassion story and a miracle story. I want to share a couple of other miracle stories. Karen and I are in Assisi, and it's later in Swami's life, and he doesn't hear all that well at this point. Yeah, that's a euphemism. He's deaf as a post. I mean, he just doesn't hear anything. So, but Karen and I are just feeling, I mean, you know, we just often just felt such love for him and just wanted to think about him and do things. And so we decide to get some flowers. So we get a little bouquet of flowers. And in Assisi, there's the center, and then he's down the road and then down a very long driveway. So we drive down his driveway and we park relatively far away. I don't mean a half mile away, but plenty far. And we walk. We basically tiptoe down because we don't want to disturb him. And we get this vase of flowers, and we bring it to his front door. And we put them down at the door, and the door bursts open. And Swami says, so good to see you. Why don't you come in for tea? And I'm thinking, you can't hear me when I say, hello, Swami. How did you know we were coming? And it's not like he spends all day looking out his window. So I have no idea. But I guess it's the same way that he knew that I thought about him on that flight. He just knew. And he invited us in, and we had tea, and it was all very sweet, of course. One other little miracle story. friend of ours lived in Ananda many years ago, who has since left. But he lived at Ananda, and he liked to visit other saints. And Swami was not opposed to that, as long as you could be sure that you wouldn't get spiritually confused. In the same way that if you want to take voice lessons, it's very good to pick a voice teacher. Singing lessons, let's say. It's very good to pick a voice teacher. It's not that other voice teachers are wrong. It's that it's just confusing to have different teachers because everyone's slightly different. If you want a batting coach, you should pick one batting coach in baseball, not five batting coaches, because they don't all do it the same way. So it's okay to visit saints, but you need to know where your aura is and where your home is. Nonetheless, this friend of ours liked to visit other saints. So he went, and he visited this saint, and at the end of the darshan, the saint handed out prasad. So it was little bits, I think it was like pudding or something, little cups of pudding, and you know, you would eat the pudding, and it was a way of bringing the blessing into yourself. Except he wasn't feeling all that well. So he just thought, I really can't eat this tonight. Now, he worked at the Hermitage. He did some work in the kitchen at the Hermitage and different things. So he took the little thing of pudding and he put it in the refrigerator. And he really wasn't terrible, but he wasn't feeling that well. So he just went home and forgot about it. The next day, Swami walks into the kitchen, sees the pudding, takes a bite, and bellows out, "Who made this? A saint made this pudding." I've eaten a lot of pudding. I have no idea who made my pudding. But again, the Swami's sensitivity of being able to be that sensitive and being able to tune to vibration that subtly. Swami often said that it was important where you eat. This is not something that we have practiced at Ananda. And quite honestly, it's not something Swami especially practiced himself. But Master did talk about being careful where you eat, because the cook tends to put vibration into the food, and because we're wide open when we're eating, we tend to absorb that vibration. And Swami certainly made that clear, you know, in this case. But well, now I have to. It's about me, so it's a little, you know, these stories I share are not personal. They have nothing to do with me. I mean, I happen to be the one who was there, but they're universal principle. But this was actually sweet, and since Karen has goaded me into it. Karen and I were managing the seclusion retreat. Anandi and Bharat were the ministers there. We were managing the retreat, keeping everything happening and working with guests and all that stuff many years ago. Swami was coming to dinner at Anandi and Bharat, so Karen and I cooked. And I rarely had opportunities to cook for Swami, but I loved to cook and was happy to do so. So we made the food and we brought it down to Anandi and Bharat's place. And I thought, you know, Swami could invite us in. It would not be shocking for him to invite us in. So I brought a bunch of extra plates and stuff down, and I left them outside, right outside the door of their place. But I brought in the food. And of course we came in, and Swami said, "Oh, you're leaving? Why don't you stay?" And I said, "Oh, thank you so much, sir. What a pleasant surprise." And then I sort of snuck outside and brought in all the extra cutlery and dishware, you know. And I don't think he noticed. Maybe he did. I don't know. But anyway, so we're sitting there eating, and Swami's eating, and after about, you know, we're just chatting about this and that. And after about 10 minutes, he says, "This food is extremely satisfying. It's just so satisfying going down." And he looked at me and said, "Do you know what that means?" And I said, "No, sir, I have no idea." He said, "It means it was made with love." So that's not a story that I will ever forget. That was also very sweet. So now I want to share a few stories, and these really are my favorites because, you know, the others are touching and wonderful, and they are, but we're here to find God. And for me, the most potent stories are the lessons. And I got a lot of those, I guess, because one of my specialties is having things to learn. Anyway, so this was a really early one, and this one, I don't know exactly why he sniffed us, really. It was both a little bit about me and Karen, but the lesson was clearly mine. Swami had just rewritten the book. It wasn't the first writing. No, he had rewritten the book, Crises in Modern Thought. This is now called Out of the Labyrinth. But back then it was called Crises in Modern Thought. And it was a major book, and he really wanted this book to make it into academia, into the college world and universities and at that level of society. So he sends the manuscript out, and he used to do this back then. He would send the manuscript out to a few people to get comments and all of that. So he sent it to Asha, Jyotish, Devi, a couple of other people like that, and me and Karen. Now, this was in the early days. I'd been in Ananda for like a year and a half, maybe 12 months. And you, I don't know if you know the old Sesame Street game. One of these things is not like the others. I looked at the list of people he sent it to, and I thought, this is an error. But he did send it to us, so we made comments. So I had majored in philosophy. I had minored in Eastern religion. I thought, you know, maybe that's part of why he's sending it. So I read the book, and it doesn't... It's not tight enough for academia. Let's just put it that way. It doesn't really cut the mustard on that level about this really follows from this, and here's my proof of this. It's just not how Swami writes. And that's fine, but he did ask for my comments. So I wrote a lot of comments, chapter by chapter. Karen writes to him and also writes comments. Now, you have to understand, I've been in Ananda, maybe it was like 9 months. You know, when you're younger, time seems longer. We maybe been there like 9 months. So Swami writes back. There's no email at the time. So he writes a letter. And the letter says, Karen, your comments were excellent, and I appreciated most of them and took quite a few of them. David, your comments were completely useless and would require me to completely rewrite the book, which I have no intention of doing. Swami. And I'm thinking, I wonder if I can move to Siberia. I wonder if that would be far enough away that he would never have to see my ugly face again. And then I thought, no, there's got to be something going on here. And what I came to see was when I wrote my comments, I was not taking him into account in any way. I was not hurting Swami's feelings because of who he was. But I was so busy saying things that were factually correct that I was paying no attention as to how my comments might affect the person that I was giving feedback to. And that was a very important lesson, which I managed to get wrong consistently for the rest of my life, but not quite as badly. But that's really what that was about. And it was a great lesson. And so we will move to the next situation in which I blew this, but less badly. We're at another expo. Karen and I did a number of these. It might have been the New York one again. I don't remember. We used to do New York, San Francisco, L.A., different places around the country. So, yeah, it was New York because Swami's on his way to Italy. So he's left Ananda Village, and he's on his way to Italy, and it's the way to do it. You're halfway there. If you make it from California to New York, you're halfway to Italy. So he knew he was going after, and he was, again, a keynote speaker at the Whole Life Expo in New York. It was Sony's 100th anniversary, the Sony company. It was their 100th anniversary. So with a big splash, they put out this great new enhanced tape recorder technology. This gives you an idea how long ago this was. It's like a little Sony Walkman, you know, those little recorders. Swami loved gadgets. He was always buying gadgets. So he had gotten this quite expensive little Sony 100th anniversary Walkman, and he spent the whole weekend going in the booth and putting it on everyone's head and saying, just listen to my music on this. Doesn't this sound terrific? And he would plop it on her head. And I had to admit, it really sounded good. It sounded like you were sitting in the orchestra pit. It was really good sound. But by the third or fourth time he'd put it on my head, I really had gotten the point. But he was very excited. See, he kept making people listen to it. Okay, so this had gone on for a day and a half. And he says, then he walks up to me and he says, you know, I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. It was, you know, right at the end of the show. I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. And the case that this Walkman came in is a pretty big case, and it was. It was one of those black, hard cases with lots of styrofoam padding in it, sort of the whole bit. It's a pretty big case, and I got a lot of stuff I'm bringing to Italy. You don't think I need the case to bring it, do you? And I said, well, sir, it's a little delicate, and it's pretty expensive. I think I'd bring the case. And he sort of says, oh. And he harumphs at me and walks away. 5 minutes later, Swami walks up to me and says, you know, I'm leaving for Italy tomorrow. And this case is kind of big. You don't think I need the case, do you? And I'm thinking, I mean, the analogy is cute. Obviously, this has nothing to do with Swami. It's like, you know, you feed a dog and they wolf down the food and then they look at you with big eyes like they haven't eaten anything. Right? So he's looking at me like, And I said, and I'm thinking, sir, and I say it a little more slowly and a little more cautiously, it's very delicate, and it's a long trip to Europe, and I think you probably should take the case. And he harumps at me and walks away. 5 minutes later, guess who's back? It's Swami. And he says, you know, I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. Exactly the same inflection even. I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. And this case is kind of big and cumbersome. You don't think I need the case, do you? Now, I'm slow, but I'm not completely dense. So I'm thinking, something's going on here. I'm not doing this right. So I say to him, no, you don't need that case. And he said, oh, good, that's what I thought. And he walks away. I was paying no attention to him. If someone walks up to you and says, don't you love my new sweater? What do you say? If they come up to you and they say, you know, I'm not sure about this sweater. I just bought it yesterday. I'm not sure it's for me. I still have the receipt. What do you think? In one case, they're actually asking for your opinion. In the other case, they're asking for validation. I never noticed that there was a difference, and I never paid any attention. It was a very good lesson. Very interesting. It took me a little while to kind of work out what was going on. Oh. As I said, I've always been very careful in my heart about my relationship with Swami and not wanting to, I don't even know how to put it, feel too good about it or make it too personal, because it's not about me. I mean, the man is just trying to save my soul, and he doesn't care about my stuff. You know, so it's just he's trying to save everybody's soul. And if I happen to have a different set of karma and I hang out with him, so I'm great. But, you know, what's the difference? But it was enjoyable to be around him, and so some of that would creep in because, you know, that's what happens. Okay. I went through a little period when I could feel it. I was starting to be really proud of is not the right word, but take pleasure in my relationship with Swami in a certain way, that kind of thing. Didn't notice it really, but I could tell it was there. I walk into the Crystal Hermitage every time I saw Swami. David, good to see you. Same inflection every time. I walk in, he walks right past me like I'm not there. Like he didn't even see me. I was the only one there. It was hard of hearing, but he was not blind. And this is a long time ago, too. Right past me. And I thought, what happened? And then I found it. And I spent that night in meditation. I killed it. And I saw him 2 days later. David, good to see you. How does he know this stuff? I didn't even know that was going on. But I found it in my meditation. And I was sure, I was absolutely certain that that's what it was. This one's cute. He had, maybe because I was so slow, we had dynamics that could go on for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. My background, I think, as probably most of you guys know, is financial. I was a vice president with UBS, the international brokerage firm. I've had a lot of financial stuff in my background. Swami was always talking about the end of the world. The end of the financial world. Everything's going to collapse because Master said it. Master never put a time on it, but Swami always spoke about it like it was tomorrow. And he would do this in front of me with great relish, and then he would look at me and say, what do you think, David? Knowing darn well that I didn't see anything coming and that I didn't think it was going to happen. And I would say, well, sir, and I was, got, you know, over the years I got so tentative. I said, well, sir, you know, I don't know. I mean, who knows what's coming, but, you know, I've been doing financial analysis for 30 years, and I just don't see anything. We'd harumph at me and turn the other way. Okay, so this is when we're singing in Italy, and this is 2003 or something, two, something like that. And he has the singers down to his place. When a major project was going on of his, and the singing project, he sent six singers to Italy to sing his music all over the country. That was his project. And when his project's going on, that's where his focus is. So it was a blessing. So he would have the singers over periodically and, you know, so we're sitting in his living room, and we're chatting about this. And Swami starts talking about the end of the financial world, which he often did. And he looks at me and says, what do you think, David? And somehow, at that moment, I popped outside of the whole thing, and I got the cosmic joke. And I just saw it from a completely different perspective. And I didn't answer. I just grinned at him. And he sort of looked at me, And he got a little twinkle in his eye, and I said, "You're baiting me, aren't you?" And he kind of just wiggled a little bit, and he changed the subject, talked about something else. And then 10 minutes later, the subject starts veering into the financial world, and he puts out these, you know, the world is ending by next Tuesday and all this sort of stuff. And then he looks at me and he says, "What do you think, David?" And I said, "You're baiting me again, aren't you?" He never brought it up in my presence again. The test was over. And I think it was related to these things that I've talked about before. It was a test for me. Just, can I really get this right? Can I really be free? The goal is freedom. Can I be free and then say what it is, whatever I need to say? And I just had too much stuff wrapped up in this financial analysis. And then once I'd gotten it right, God wants us to be happy. But more than being happy, he wants you to learn what you need to learn. And so if he needs to whack you with a 2x4 for you to learn what you need to learn, you'll get whacked by a 2x4. But once you've learned the lesson, why torment people? Karen, did you have a comment? Which was? Oh, yeah, that's right. So, you know, Swami was often putting out the financial stuff? That's right. I wrote to Swami independently. When the crisis hit in 2008, I wrote to Swami and I said, "Sir, for the first time in my life, I can see the seeds now, finally, of the financial chaos and basically destruction that Master wrote about. And I can see it. My analysis tells me that it is now possible." And in the past, I always said to him, "Sir, look, I mean, the Martians can land. I don't know what to say, but from my perspective, what you're talking about really just can't happen." So I wrote to him and said, "Now I can see it. I don't see it imminently, but I can see that it's possible." And he wrote back and he said, "Let's hope not." Which is very interesting because he'd always been beating that drum. And this time, you know, I think maybe I'd gotten a lesson and he just saw no point in arguing about it. Oh, this is just interesting. I've had the peculiar karma, and I don't know what to call it, of catching Swami twice as he was falling down. Once was here in Palo Alto, and once was at the Village. And I'm fast at stuff. I was a sprinter in college. I played drums. I was my dark past. I was a pinball wizard. My hands are fast. My reactions are fast. It's just what I do. I'm sitting at a Swami event here, and he's walking off the steps. And he missed a step, and he started going over, and boom. Probably if Chittambar had been in the front row, he would have had him too. But I got there and I caught him, and his full weight hit my shoulder. I'm sure he was going to hit the ground. And the same thing happened at the Village once. But the thing that was the lesson that was striking to me, I caught him, I righted him, he didn't even look at me or say thank you, and he just walked on. It was like writing one of those little wind-up toys that goes, and you write them, and they just go, and they just move on. I thought that was so cool. If that had happened to me, I would have been either embarrassed, I would have been overly thankful to the person who caught me, I would have made an energy around it somehow. And he just, as soon as he got righted, his feet started going again, and he just walked off. And it's not that he was showing me to not be grateful when people help you. That obviously is not the lesson. It was just, don't let anything disturb your consciousness. I think his foot could have fallen off, and if somebody had picked it up and reattached it, he would have just walked on. It was very interesting. Both times was exactly the same thing. Here's a multi-year story. This was cool. As my friends here know, I like to tease. I used to tease in a way, it wasn't ever harsh, but I would tease in a way where the teasing was not so obvious. So sometimes the other person would believe me, and I'd have to say, "Oh, I'm just kidding," and then they'd feel foolish. You know what I mean? And it's awkward. You never want to take the chance of putting someone in an awkward position. That's really what it comes down to. But I didn't get that. Okay. So I would tease in front of Swami. And his method was to always take me seriously when I teased. And then I always felt like an idiot. So I remember one time, Karen has... It's hard to tell what ethnicity Karen is a little bit. She looks... When we were in India and she wore a sari, she looked a little Indian. She also can look a little Israeli. When Swami wrote the oratorio, he combined it with a bunch of slideshows. So whenever you did the oratorio music, there were slideshows that would happen, and the slides were his photos, and they would illustrate the song. And Karen can look a little Israeli. So he said, Karen, why don't you come to the Crystal Hermitage? I want to take a couple shots. So he put a blue and white scarf around her, which are the Israeli colors. He put a blue and white scarf around her head, and she really did look pretty Israeli. And he took some photos. Now, this is in the early years. He was just putting the oratorio together. Okay, so we're at the Crystal Hermitage, I don't know, a few weeks later or something. And he says to Karen, we're both there. It's just the three of us. And he says to Karen, oh, Karen, by the way, thank you so much for being willing to pose for the photos. I wound up not using them. Now, I couldn't resist that. So I said, oh, sir, that's really a shame, because we sent press releases to the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and NBC News, which obviously is just completely, who would do that? And he said, oh, I'm so sorry. So, of course, I felt like an idiot. So this is the kind of thing that would happen. Every time I teased him, he would take me completely seriously, and I would have to apologize. But I'm so slow, I never got it. Okay. So this goes on for 7 years. I'm telling you, I'm really a little slow. Okay, so we're in the Crystal Hermitage, and he's got this vase with flowers. And I go over to smell the flowers, and they smell really good. I have never smelled, I don't know what they were, but whatever they were, these were the sweetest smelling flowers I've ever smelled by a factor of like 3. So I smell the flowers, and Swami's standing next to me. And I said, sir, these are incredible. And he said, oh, that's because we buy perfume and we spray them with the perfume. Now, for 7 years, Swami has been teaching me to not tease. So I say to him, really? And he says, oh, gosh, David, don't be ridiculous. Who sprays real flowers with scent? And he walks away. And I got it. I finally learned, don't do that, because now I was on the receiving end of feeling like an idiot. So I'm pretty good at this now. Every once in a while, someone believes my tease sufficiently, or I have to apologize. So I can't say I've completely changed, but that was a very potent lesson. Now, I don't think Swami sets these things up. I don't think at the beginning he decided, this will probably take 7 years, but in year 7, I'm going to spring my trap. I think Swami does what he feels guided to do. And he just does what Master tells him. And if you can keep that constant contact with Master, you're always just doing the right thing. And so there have been times in his life where he's done projects that have blown up. His marriage, which was very difficult, and it really made him look a little silly, the first marriage to Maharmeshwari. It really made him look a little silly. I don't think he decided it's time for me to look ridiculous. But he felt guided by Master to do that. And so it happened. And in retrospect, I can see the incredible blessing of it. Because the monastery at Ananda Village was really in concrete. And there was this big dichotomy that the people in the monastery were the real devotees and the householders weren't. And once Swami did get married, it killed that energy. And the marriage didn't last, and that was fine because the lesson happened. So I don't think Swami consciously decided to do all that, but he was constantly living in Master's will and just knew. So these lessons that come, I don't think he's like planning these things, like here's what I should do. So I'll share another one. This one also is one of my favorites. Oh, it should be on my list, but it's not there. But I'm going to tell it anyway. Oh, this is under... It's also a lesson, but it's also teaching as individual. I think we have to be really careful when we take something Swami said to someone and try and universalize it. Yes, there's often universal principles, but at the same time, the lessons are often very personal. Okay, so here's the story. Karen and I are traveling with Swami. We're doing another expo, and Swami takes people to very fine restaurants. It's always been a thing. And my belief is that the reason Swami always did that was because both Ananda and devotees in general can suffer from poverty consciousness. That is, there's something about, you know, I'm a devotee, there's something about money that's dirty. And Master was never that way. And I think our samskaras of having been in poverty and renunciates on that level in Kali Yuga, there's something about money like, I don't want to deal with money. And that's not right. Because to get out of the material plane, we have to graduate out. You can't fail out. And anything that you deny is a denial of God. So people in Ananda Village, especially in the early years when this story took place, were always struggling with money. And Swami always made it a point to take people to fancy restaurants. So the entourage is traveling with Swami, and you'd feel it. You'd be there, and you'd walk past a place, and you think, oh, that's a really nice restaurant. I know that's going to be it. And Swami would say, here's a nice place. Let's eat here. And everyone would immediately start, do you have any extra money? Do you have my credit card's maxed out? Do you have a credit card? Because you wanted to be with Swami. And then you'd open the menu and people would try and order a breadstick. And Swami would have no energy for that. So people would have to order up and, you know, okay. So Karen and I are with a small group, maybe six of us, eight of us, something like that, wherever, with Swami. And we walk past a really nice restaurant. And one of us in the group says, that place looks nice. And Swami says, nope, way too expensive. And I almost fell over. So way too expensive? I've never heard those words out of Swami's mouth before. So we go down and we pass another place that's more modest. Swami says, nope, too expensive. And I'm thinking, who kidnapped my Swami and substituted this space alien? You know, this is ridiculous. So we go past another place, and this place is really modest. Nope, too expensive. Finally, we walk past the place, and it was crummy. I mean, it was plastic tables with those red checkered plastic tablecloths on it and plastic green chairs, excuse me, and handwritten stuff on the paper on the walls and stuff. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding. So we sit down to eat, and I'm trying to figure out what is going on here. Then the bill comes. Swami says, it's on me. And I'm thinking, I just don't understand. And then I looked around the table. And I won't name the names, I could. Every single person at that table had money or had absolutely no fear of money. And I knew each of them well. Why spend money? Why waste money on a fancy restaurant if there's no point? The food was perfectly good in that place, by the way. We all had a very nice meal. And it cost Swami $50. 3 days later, four more people show up. Now we're all walking down the street. Here's a nice place. $60 a plate. Isn't that interesting? The lessons are completely individual. So you just can't carry this thing. Swami takes people to fancy restaurants. Swami does what Master tells him to do. And that lesson just wasn't necessary. And as I said, God wants us to be happy. There's no point in squandering money. But if you're holding on to your money too tight, now there's a good reason to squander it. And I can't call it squandering, but you get the idea. So Swami would, and as soon as those other people showed up, it was back to the expensive restaurants. I just thought that was so cool. Oh, this one is just incredibly sweet. It's a little personal, but really it's just about how Swami was with people. And I have a low odds chance of getting through this whole story, but I will do my best. I was often responsible for the big Swami events in Palo Alto. So when Swami would come to Palo Alto and we rented the San Jose Performing Arts Center, whatever it was, I would organize the volunteers, rent the center, the parking, work with Karen on the promo, sort of the whole thing. And it was incredible joy, and it was a lot of work, because there'd be 60 volunteers on the team, you know, the parking and the ushers and promo, and the whole bit. Anyway, so we finished one. I might have been San Jose, I don't remember, but we finished one, and this was in 2013, I guess. 12. I didn't want to say that part. But it was in 2013, I think. And Swami finishes the event, and he was tired after these things. And again, this is late, so he's up in age, too. So I knew he would always go home and go back to Ashen David's and nap. So he goes back there. But I didn't want to let the afterglow go. You know, those things are so joyful. So I went over to Asha's, knock on the door, just to chat. So Karen and I walk over to Asha's. And Asha's answered the door, and she says, Swami's napping. And I said, no, of course. And she said, okay, yeah, come on in, but if he wakes up, split. You know, leave him be. Because he was always gracious, and he would always give energy to whoever's there. I didn't need to take more of his energy. He was tired. Okay, so we're there 10 minutes or something. The door opens, Swami walks out. And I can't turn my back on him. I say, sir, wonderful program. Thank you so much. A real joy to see you. You know, hopefully I'll be able to see you a little bit tomorrow. And I start to walk out, and he says, don't leave. And I said, sir, I understand. I mean, you're tired. And he said, sit. I said, yes, sir. So we go into the living room, we sit down. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And Asha's there, too. Was David there, too? I don't remember. So I think it was just the four of us. Asha's there. And I say, sir, thank you so much. It's really been lovely to chat with you. So I stand up. He says, sit. 20 minutes, 25 minutes, 30 minutes. Asha says, sir, I have some things to do. He says, oh, okay, fine. 40 minutes, 50 minutes, an hour. It's the last time I ever saw him. He was saying goodbye. I didn't realize till like a year later. It's the last time I ever saw him. He wouldn't let us leave. We were there for like an hour and a quarter. No, it wasn't 3 hours. Was it really 3 hours? I don't remember. I was in a time warp. And finally says, okay, time for dinner. I'm hungry. See you later. And he gets up and walks away. We never saw him again. So we're on our way to Italy. And we had booked it to see Swami. And he passes away before we get there. And so we land just in time to find out that his body has already left Italy and is now on the way to America. And I turn to Karen and I say, that man will do anything to avoid me. Let's see. There was some other story that I wanted to tell that just flitted through my mind and now is gone. Give me just a moment. Let me see if I can find it. So I'm sure it's on this list. Karen and I are also writing a book. I mean, I have a lot more stories, excuse me, that are, I'm not going to do tonight. We're writing a book of all these experiences, and we're getting there. When I found myself managing East West, that project got shelved for a little while, but it will get done. And it's a great blessing to be able to do that sort of stuff. Oh, this is cute. Oh, yeah, some of these just about how sweet Swami was. We went to Milano with Swami. He was doing a talk in Milan, way up in northern Italy. And we were very blessed. There was just a few of us, Anand Kirtani, Leela Lakshman, and me and Karen. I think that was the whole group, by train. And it's a long train ride, so we got to spend a good amount of time with him. He goes up to Milano, and these weekends are packed. And, you know, he's so gracious. He's seeing everyone. He's gracious with everyone. He meets everyone with real energy. He gives this long talk. We're on the train home, and it's 6 hours, 8 hours, something. It's a long trip from Milan down there. We're getting close to Assisi, where you change trains, or someone was going to pick us up in the van. I don't remember. But we're getting close, and Swami looks up, and there's just a few of us in the car, and says, maybe we should go out for pizza. Is anyone hungry? And I'm thinking, sir, we've been stuffing ourselves for 3 days. No one is hungry. Yeah, people are exhausted. I mean, it's a long trip, and everyone's full and all of that. And no one says anything. And he looks at me, and he says, I'm not quite this way anymore, but I had a bit of a reputation. So he says, David, surely you want pizza. And now I got it. I have learned over the years. And I said, I could go for pizza. And Swami says, good, I thought so. And he takes us all out for pizza. He just wanted to give people energy. Remember Master with the ice cream? He really wanted to take the boys out for ice cream. So many things Swami did. And again, it wasn't a conscious patterning. But so many things he did or said. Later, I would find the story of Master that was similar or something Master said. And he just didn't want the evening to end. He wanted to just give us energy. So we all went out for pizza. And we were doubly exhausted by the end, but it was, I mean, just to be in his presence, it was such a joy. So, unending sweetness. Oh, this also was very sweet. It wasn't about me personally, but I was there. There was a whole bunch of people. There must have been 50, 60 of us at the village. In the dome over at Crystal Hermitage. And it was just a big satsang, and everyone was asking Swami questions and all this. And a woman at the village who is generally inarticulate, but is especially inarticulate in a group, so in a big setting like that, but she really had this question she wanted to ask. And so she raised her hand, and she started asking this question, and I had no idea what she was saying. Incredibly inarticulate and nervous and humming and hawing and hemming and hawing and sort of all that stuff. And Swami was just so sweet. He said, oh, I see what you're asking. And then he rephrased her question into, like, the question was so beautiful, I was uplifted by the question. And she said, yeah, that's what I meant. And it was just, I was so touched. And then he gave this gorgeous answer. He said, thank you so much for asking your wonderful question. It was just so sweet. So he could do that, and he could blast me, and he could take people to the expensive restaurant. It was whatever God wanted him to do, and it was whatever you needed to learn your lesson. And it's why I always learn to just say yes. Just say yes. You have no idea what's going on. Our whole, if I may, our whole difficulty on the path is that we believe that matter is more real than spirit. We believe that matter is more real than spirit. If we didn't believe that, we would not be on this planet. And every time we're asked to do something, our objection is to the thing and never really to the energy of it and to what it's going to bring us. It's, I don't want to stand in the aisle. I like to tease. I don't think this book is well written. I don't think it's all material. And as long as we keep affirming that matter is more real than spirit, we're going to be stuck. And everything Swami did was to try and blast us out of that consciousness to see that it's only spirit that matters. And hanging around him, if you were able to do that, and it's why it was so exhausting, it would put you in that consciousness and you could see things that you wouldn't otherwise see. Because from that consciousness, it all made sense. And then you'd leave and the clouds would come back and you'd be a boobhead again. But there we are. Anyway, so just a small capturing of stories. I hope that was fun.
Thank you guys.
Oh, it's so great. I can just spend the whole evening talking about some of these things.
This was a lot of fun. The one big takeaway for me and for both you guys is there's such a fine line between the sweetness and the miracles. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that any of us or me, I can be sweet and suddenly have miracles. But it is important.
If we're doing what God wants us to do, it's all the same stuff.
That's right.
God can do anything. Our little egos can't. So the more we can get the junk out of the way, and it's really just seeing it, spirit is more real than matter. And if we live in that consciousness, it's all possible.
And that's where the sweetness comes in.
Exactly.
That spirit is more important than the matter.
Why wouldn't you be sweet? The only reason we're not sweet, the only reason we don't love, the only reason we don't serve, the only reason we get lazy about our meditations is because we think matter is more important than spirit. We're protecting the ego. Why wouldn't you love? Our natural state is to serve and to love. So we just have to get, I think of it as we're filled with cholesterol. And all we have to do is get all the cholesterol out of there and then the energy can flow freely. My spine is just filled with cholesterol. So I need to stop eating fattening foods. And Swami was a great roto-rooter and would help with that. And then it's just a question of really being open to that energy and really taking it in. So I tried as best I can, every glance, just like Swami said about Master, every glance had a meaning. And so everything that he did that looked peculiar was trying to tell me something, because this man was not a fool and had a very good memory. So if he's asking me the same question 4 times in 6 minutes, he's trying to tell me something. And then to just really relax and open to whatever it is that he's trying to put out. I mean, that's the best you can do. And if I cut a couple lifetimes off by trying to do that, well, I'm very grateful. Anyway, thanks for coming. Our joy to share this stuff.
Thank you both.